The Gift That Keeps On Giving by Soph. Chapter 1. The Pygmy Puff. If pressed, Fred was going to say that the Pygmy Puff was entirely George's idea. It wasn't, of course, but he needed someone to blame in case his gift didn't go over well. George, knowing how badly Fred wanted to charm the birthday witch, said that he was perfectly fine with being scapegoated, though he assured Fred that such scapegoating was likely unnecessary. Securing the gift hadn't been a problem. Wrapping it, on the other hand, was taking a bit more time than Fred had anticipated. He was currently sitting on his bed, using the tip of a quill to poke holes in the cardboard box beside him. It was a small box, no bigger than his hand, and it had been painstakingly covered in shiny gold foil. He had already poked holes into three sides of it. All he had left to do was poke a hole or two in the last side, and maybe another one on the top for good measure. On his bedside table, a purple pygmy puff squeaked in its cage, and he found himself smiling over at it. "Excited, Humph?" he asked as he pierced the box once more. "You should be. You're going to have the best owner in all the world. Just wait and see." Lee Jordan snickered, setting aside his potions textbook as he did so. Fred shot him a look, warning him to keep his mouth shut if he knew what was good for him. As usual, though, Lee didn't pay this expression any mind. "I'm not sure that Hermione will be the best owner, mate. You know how she gets when she's studying." Fred tilted his head, thinking of the way Hermione's brow furrowed when she was lost in a book, and the way her lips curved upwards when she read something pleasing. Yes, he knew exactly how Hermione could be when she was studying, but he didn't see anything wrong with that. "I do know," he told Lee, trying to keep from sounding too smug. "Do her study habits somehow preclude her from being a wonderful owner?" "I reckon she might forget to feed poor Humphrey or something," Lee said. Fred poked two more holes in the box before sitting back with a grin. He wasn't going to let Humphrey go hungry. If feeding the purple critter happened to slip Hermione's mind, well, he would just have to make sure that he was available to help out. "Don't worry about that, mate," he said, opening Humphrey's cage and scooping the critter up with one hand. "I have a plan." Lee groaned. "Do I want to know?" Fred brushed off this query with a quick shake of his head, too intent on settling Humphrey into the cardboard box to give his friend a proper answer. "Now, you'll need to be very quiet, Humph," he said solemnly, fixing his eyes on the pygmy puff's tiny black ones. "No squeaking or chittering or noise of any kind, all right? If you make a sound, you'll ruin the surprise." Humphrey made a small chirping noise that Fred pretended was a sound of assent. "Excellent. I'm going to close the box now, but don't worry, little fellow. You should still be able to breathe through the air holes I made." With a quick flick of his wand, he secured the box with a strand of ribbon that flew out of the tip and tied itself into a bow. It wasn't his neatest work, but he didn't think that Hermione would mind too much. "All right, Lee, I'm off to give Hermione her present," Fred said, holding the package securely to his chest as he strode towards the dormitory door. He could hear Humphrey skittering around inside of the box, no doubt trying to acclimate himself to his new environment. The sooner he delivered his gift to Hermione, the better, and not just because he was dying to see the expression on her face when she opened it.
"Good luck, mate,"
Lee called after him. As it was a rather gloomy Tuesday afternoon, Fred wasn't surprised to find Hermione curled up by the common room fireplace. Despite the bravado that he had exhibited in front of Lee, his stomach was tied up in knots. What if Hermione hated his present? He had tried to go with something unromantic, despite his feelings for the witch, because he didn't know how she felt about him. He was concerned that he might make her uncomfortable if she didn't feel the same way. His face broke into a soft smile as he watched Hermione from the opposite side of the room. Her curly hair was pulled back into a messy bun, and she was surrounded by books and pieces of parchment. Every now and then, she would grab her quill and scribble something, then throw the quill back down again. Fred couldn't see her face, but he imagined she was probably doing that adorable scrunching thing with her brow. Bringing Humphrey's box up to eye level, he tried to peer through one of the holes that he had poked, but they were too small. "Ready, Humph?" he whispered.
You're about to meet your new owner.
If anyone present in the common room thought it was strange that he was whispering to a cardboard box, they didn't let on. Hermione was certainly too engrossed in her studies to pay him any attention, and he was grateful for that. The element of surprise had always served him well. Fred carefully positioned the box so that he was holding it behind his back, then sidled his way over to the table that Hermione had commandeered. Almost immediately, she looked up at him and narrowed her eyes.
"Can I help you, Fred?" She leaned over, as if trying to peer behind him. "You're not hiding any banned objects, are you?"
Fred chuckled.
"Oh, ye of little faith! I would never!"
He yearned to join her, to claim the arm of the squashy armchair she was seated in, but he didn't want to give away his surprise just yet.
"You wouldn't?"
Hermione raised an eyebrow.
"Forgive me, but if memory serves, you and your twin brother had a rather large stash of screaming yo-yos in your dormitory last year."
"Ah, yes, those," Fred said lightly. "I suppose you're right about that, but you're not right about what I'm holding in my hands right now. It isn't a banned item, and it isn't an object I would use for any sort of pranking either."
He watched, delighted, as Hermione tried to work out what he was hiding from her. He could practically see the gears turning in her head as she ran through various possibilities and discarded them. Finally, she let out a huff of frustration, evidently stumped.
"Fine, I'll bite," she said. "What is it?"
"It's a birthday present," Fred said brightly,
bringing the box around and showing it to her.
"Happy birthday, Hermione."
At first, Hermione looked as if she wasn't sure how to respond. A tiny smile battled a frown, and her eyes seemed to widen and narrow at the same time.
"Thanks, Fred," she said at last.
She took the package from him, blushing slightly, and gave it a careful examination. Fred held his breath, hoping that Humphrey would remain silent inside. And to his surprise, the pygmy puff did.
"There are holes in both the gift wrap and the box. I presume that was done on purpose?"
"It was," Fred smiled.
He could tell that the package had piqued her curiosity, though she tried not to show it. He had spent enough time observing her from afar to know when something intrigued her.
"I'm thinking it's some sort of creature, then."
Hermione held the box up to her ear, and Fred marveled at the way the shiny gift wrap reflected firelight onto her hair.
"And it's either a very quiet creature or a very obedient one."
Fred chuckled. Pygmy puffs weren't exactly known for being either of those things. They were bred to be cute and fluffy, and that was pretty much it.
"Why don't you open it and see?"
He nudged Hermione's arm gently.
"Go on, put the poor creature out of its misery."
She smiled and began to untie the ribbon with care. As she did so, Fred finally allowed himself to settle onto the arm of her chair so that he wouldn't miss a single reaction to his gift. There was the added benefit of being close to Hermione, too, though, of course. He could almost reach out and grab one of the curls that had tumbled down around her face.
"Oh, wow, it's so bright," Hermione said, looking down at Humphrey. What is it, exactly?"
"It's a pygmy puff. George and I started breeding them over the summer, and I wanted you to have one of the very first ones. I've been calling this fellow Humphrey, Hump for short, but you can rename him if you like."
Hermione shook her head as she gave Humphrey a little pat.
"I like Humphrey. I don't think I'll call him Humph, though. That makes it sound like I'm cross with him."
Fred privately made a note to call the little puff Humph at every possible opportunity, just to see the expression on Hermione's face.
"But it rolls so well off the tongue," he teased aloud. "Anyway, what do you think? Do you like your gift?"
He bounced onto the balls of his feet as he awaited her reply, hoping with every fiber of his being that she would answer in the affirmative. Although he had that plan to blame George if she didn't, he would be quite disappointed if his gift turned out to be a spectacular failure. By now, Humphrey had managed to climb up Hermione's arm and nestle himself in the crook of her neck, prompting a giggle from her. Fred couldn't help but smile at the joyful look on her face, an expression so bright it could have replaced the sun itself.
"I love it," she said breathlessly. "Thank you, Fred."
Happiness washed over Fred as he processed her response. She didn't just like his present, She loved it. He was so happy that he could have kissed her. He didn't, of course, but the temptation was there, lurking just below the surface of his jovial smile. If only she would make some indication that she had feelings for him, too. That would cement his position as the happiest man in the world.
"I'm glad," he managed. "Hey, stay right here. I'll go grab Hump's cage from my dorm."
With that, he sprinted off, ignoring Hermione's exasperated, "It's Humphrey, Fred!" Halfway through dinner that night, Fred slid onto the bench beside Hermione. She looked over at him and raised a single eyebrow, but otherwise did nothing to acknowledge his presence. Her earlier delight seemed to have faded, replaced by her usual no-nonsense manner.
"You two need to make sure you keep up on your homework,"
she sternly told Harry and Ron, who were seated across from her. Fred had to bite back a laugh. She was really in her element, and he so enjoyed watching her like this.
"Umbridge is probably looking for any chance to find cracks in our education, so she can fill our heads with more of her ministry-approved drivel."
Fred blinked. It sounded as though Hermione was speaking ill of a teacher. He hadn't heard her do that before, except with Trelawney, and he could hardly blame her for that. He couldn't blame her for speaking ill of Umbridge either, though. The woman was a complete and utter cow.
"Not a fan of Umbridge, eh?"
he muttered in her ear. She started, placing a hand to her chest.
"You scared me, Fred!"
She glanced around before adding quietly,
"No, I'm not. What do you want, anyway?"
"What, was this seat taken?"
Fred smiled at her, as Harry and Ron looked on, similar puzzled expressions gracing their faces.
"No."
A blush crept up Hermione's neck and pinkened her cheeks.
Sorry. You're welcome to sit here, of course. I just figured you'd be sitting with George, because that's what you usually do."
"Well, I'm pleased to know that you've been paying attention to me."
Fred winked at her, before nodding at his brother.
"All right there, Ron. You look like Crookshanks when he's been outsmarted by a gnome."
Hermione and Harry laughed while Ron rearranged his facial features slightly.
"I'm fine," he said,
stabbing at a piece of chicken with more force than Fred thought was necessary.
"I'm with Hermione, though. What do you want? You don't usually sit with us." "I just thought I'd check and see how Humph is acclimating to his new quarters," Fred said,
smiling at the witch beside him. He was quite pleased with his resolution to use the Puff's shortened name as often as possible, for the way Hermione pursed her lips in disapproval only made his smile widen.
"Humphrey,"
she said, almost as if she couldn't help herself. Knowing her, she probably couldn't. Correcting people was second nature to her.
"Honestly, Fred, it's not that difficult to add an extra syllable. And he's settling in just fine."
"Well, if you lecture him even half as often as you lecture me, I reckon the poor fellow's having a miserable time."
Fred clucked his tongue.
"He'll need some cheering up, then. I suppose you'll just have to bring him down to the common room so that I can play with him."
Hermione shook her head, but she was smiling now, too.
"I suppose I can do that. I have a potions essay to write, but..."
"Wait, what potions essay?"
Ron interrupted, spraying crumbs onto the table. He swallowed and gave Hermione an alarmed look.
"I didn't think we had an essay this week."
Fred stared down at the crumbs that Ron had deposited onto the wooden surface. He barely heard Hermione's reply, too focused on the tiny pieces of food. They had given him an idea.
"I'll catch you and Humphrey later," he murmured,
as Harry professed indignation at Hermione's swattiness. Apparently, the essay wasn't due for another 2 weeks. Reluctantly, Fred returned to his seat next to George and Lee. His twin and their friend were deep in discussion about a new line of potential joke shop products, but he wasn't interested in joining the conversation. Instead, he shoveled the contents of his plate into his mouth, trying to finish his food as quickly as possible. Every so often, however, his gaze slid over to the curly-haired witch seated just a short distance away. Once his plate had only some small crumbs left on it, Fred surreptitiously used his wand to put the leftover bits into a small, clear bag. Pygmy puffs, like their larger counterparts, puffskeins, seemed to eat a wide variety of things. Bugs, bits of parchment, and any leftover scraps of food that they could find. These morsels would be perfect for Humphrey. Fred slipped the bag into the pocket of his robes and stood.
All right, lads. I'm going to head up to the dorm and check on some mail orders that came in earlier.
George and Lee paused their discussion to nod, and with this blessing, he exited the great hall. Contrary to what he had told his friends, however, he had no intention of fulfilling the mail orders just then. Instead, he wanted to plot. Plot the many ways that Hermione Granger's birthday present could be the gift that kept on giving. Chapter 2. Confessions and Consequences. By the end of September and into the first week of October, Fred and Hermione had worked out a sort of schedule in regards to Humphrey's care. Hermione usually played with him on weekday afternoons while Fred was at Quidditch practice. Fred then played with him on weekends when Hermione holed herself up in the library to study for hours on end. They often took turns feeding him bits of whatever meal they'd snuck crumbs from that day, although he was also self-sufficient and liked to eat whatever he could find along the edges of the walls in Hermione's dormitory. Small bugs, bits of parchment, and the occasional leaf or dust bunny. Fred was always happy to have an excuse to see Hermione, of course, but he was very fond of the little pygmy puff as well. Humphrey let out a happy squeak whenever he saw the redhead, and he made a similar noise whenever he saw Hermione, too. Fred thought that this was adorable, and he could never help the wide smile that it brought to his face. The only downside to sharing custody of such a cute creature was that once other students caught wind of his existence, they wanted to fawn all over him, too. Lavender Brown and Parvati Patil, in particular, had taken quite a liking to the purple puffball, and though their delighted squeals irritated Fred to no end, he tried not to show it. He could tell, however, that Hermione was also annoyed by the pair. Therefore, he was only too happy to suggest that Hermione come up to his dormitory to play with Humphrey, away from her boisterous classmates.
"I don't know how you manage, living with those two," he told her one day.
It was a chilly Wednesday afternoon in the middle of October, and Quidditch practice had been cancelled indefinitely thanks to that miserable cow, Umbridge. Fred was sprawled out on his bed, deliberately ignoring the pile of homework set by all his professors. Hermione was perched on the edge of the bed, allowing Humphrey to hop up and down her arm. Sometimes, the pygmy puff lost his balance and went tumbling towards her lap, but she was always quick to catch him before he could topple all the way down to the floor.
"Who? Lavender and Parvati?"
Hermione shook her head, and Fred wondered if she was thinking about how the two girls had barged into the room earlier and demanded to see Humphrey. Hermione had sent them away with a stern rebuke that made Fred appreciate her fiery side that much more.
"I admit, living with them has its challenges, but as long as I stay out of their way, things are fine."
Her shoulders slumped a little.
"Unfortunately, their preoccupation with poor Humphrey makes it rather difficult to avoid them these days."
Fred sat up and sighed.
"I'm sorry, Hermione. I didn't realize Humphrey would cause you any trouble when I gave him to you."
"Don't be sorry,"
she said quickly, flashing him a quick smile as if to add additional reassurance to her words.
"I love Humphrey, truly. He's been a great comfort, especially now that Umbridge has disbanded so many clubs and activities."
Fred's throat grew tight. Although he didn't mind spending extra time with Hermione, the truth was that he missed Quidditch. Flying around on his broom allowed him to clear his head, and smashing bludgers helped him release his pent-up frustration towards his mother, who only wanted him and George to join the ministry after Hogwarts, and nothing more. As such, he fervently hoped that the Gryffindor team would be reinstated soon.
"Yeah,"
he said gruffly, after several moments had passed.
"Yeah, it's been rather glum around here, hasn't it?"
Hermione caught Humphrey and gently cupped him in her hands, then turned to peer at Fred.
"Are you all right, Fred?"
Fred didn't think that she had ever uttered his name with such concern before, and he might have laughed had he not felt so miserable inside. People liked to think that he wasn't capable of feeling sad because he was always trying to make others laugh, but they were wrong. Humor was a coping mechanism for him.
"Not really," he confessed.
And before long, he found himself telling her about his desire to open a joke shop with George, despite his mother's wishes, about how much he missed Quidditch, and even about how hopeless Umbridge's reign made him feel. Hermione moved away only once, to deposit Humphrey back into his cage. During the rest of Fred's confession, she remained by his side, her warm brown eyes full of understanding as she listened. By the time he was finished speaking, Fred was slightly hoarse. He cleared his throat a few times and waited for Hermione to recoil, or worse, take pity on him. To his immense relief, she did neither. Instead, she scooted closer, close enough that he could have leaned over and kissed her, and wrapped her arms around him. Surprised, but secretly pleased to have a reason to hold her, he forced out a chuckle as he rested his chin on her soft curls, which smelled vaguely of something floral.
"It was that bad, huh?"
"You shouldn't have to keep all that inside," she whispered back.
Fred pulled away slightly.
"I suppose I didn't think telling anyone would help. I thought I could just push forward with joke shop stuff and pretend that everything was fine. But Umbridge..."
"Isn't going away?"
Hermione finished. He nodded.
"I know her methods are frustrating, but Harry plans to keep running DA meetings, so at least we'll have that small form of resistance."
Fred pretended to look shocked.
"Who knew Hermione Granger would ever go against a teacher's teachings?"
"Please," Hermione said with a sniff, though Fred didn't miss the way that her lips curled upward in a slight smile. "I'd hardly call what she's doing teaching."
"No,"
Fred said, tearing his gaze away from her mouth.
"No, I suppose you wouldn't."
He paused.
"Thanks for listening, Hermione."
Hermione squeezed his hand, a small gesture that made his stomach do cartwheels.
"Anytime, Fred." "Quidditch is back on," Angelina announced towards the end of dinner 1 week later. "I talked to Dumbledore, and he got the team reinstated."
Fred froze as two contrasting emotions battled for dominance. On the one hand, he was thrilled at the prospect of playing Quidditch again. On the other hand, his free time would be lessened considerably, and that was disappointing. He and George needed more data so that they could perfect their skiving snack boxes, which meant that he would have to forgo spending time with Hermione and Humphrey. The thought caused a small pang of sadness on top of his other reactions, but he quickly brushed it off.
"That's great," he said. "So when's our next practice, Captain?"
Angelina grinned at him.
"Tomorrow evening, of course. Our first match is in just 3 weeks, and we need all the training time we can get."
Fred nodded, then turned to George and Lee.
"Looks like we'll have to wait until the weekend to test and demo the puking pastilles again, eh, lads?"
It didn't take long for the three friends to arrange a time to work on the latest skiving snack box. Once that was settled, Fred moved over to the next bench and slid in beside Hermione. Her hair appeared especially bushy, and he had to resist the urge to run his fingers through it.
"Can I talk to you?"
he asked quietly. Her brow furrowed, and she looked over at Harry and Ron before answering, perhaps afraid that they would start worrying too.
"Is everything all right? It's not Humphrey, is it?"
"No, Humph is fine, but..."
"Humphrey!"
"Yes, yes, he's fine. But I wanted to talk to you about his care," Fred said. "Quidditch is back on. Angelina got the team reinstated, and we've got our first practice tomorrow evening. So I might not be able to spend as much time with the little fellow."
"Well, he can fend for himself in terms of food, if need be."
Hermione tapped a finger on her chin.
"He's not the best at entertaining himself when he's alone, though. I think he gets bored. Maybe I can ask Lavender and Parvati to play with him."
Fred wasn't too keen on this idea, but he couldn't think of anything better.
"I'm sure they'll love that."
"Yes, he'll certainly be in very enthusiastic hands," Hermione said, laughing.
Fred grinned.
"That he will."
He nodded at her plate, which was empty, save for a neat pile of crumbs on the left side.
"Are those for our fluffy little friend?"
"They are. Oh, I nearly forgot."
Hermione slapped her forehead.
"I have to work on a herbology essay this week. Professor Sprout wants 10 inches on the herbivorous charm by next Friday, and I need to have it outlined by tomorrow so I can have it finished by this weekend."
She sent Fred an apologetic look.
Is there any chance that you can check on Humphrey tomorrow night, even though you've got Quidditch practice?
Though Fred was certain that he would have done absolutely anything she asked anyway, he was more than happy to oblige to such a simple request.
Of course. It doesn't take long to feed him and play with him a bit, he said.
He watched, impressed, as she transferred the pile of crumbs into a bag without the use of her wand.
I didn't know you were so good at wandless magic.
Much to his delight, she blushed.
I'm not, she said quickly.
She seemed to make a show of tying the bag with her hands rather than with magic, Fred thought.
I'm just working on the basics, that's all.
Always so modest, Fred teased. Seriously, though, you'll have to show me what else you can do.
By now, Hermione's face was the color of the scarlet yarn that Fred's mum used to make so many of her children's Christmas sweaters. Fred hoped that she might respond to his invitation to demonstrate her abilities. But at that moment, Angelina called for Fred and Harry to join the rest of the team. Reluctantly, Fred stood and headed back to his initial seat, but not before turning to blow a small kiss to Hermione on the way. The last week of October was cold by Hogwarts standards. Humphrey didn't like the cold, and shrieked and shivered until his cage was put beside the common room fire, or someone tucked him into their pocket. He also liked it when someone, especially Fred or Hermione, snuggled him against their chest. Sometimes they carried him around the castle so that he could experience different rooms outside of Gryffindor Tower. He seemed particularly fond of the library, and Fred was amused that he took after Hermione in that regard. Of course, he was also amused by the thought of Madame Pince's reaction should she learn of the critter's existence amongst her precious books. When other students began to ask where they could obtain a pygmy puff, Fred was elated. The free advertising was a completely unintended consequence of giving Humphrey to Hermione. At this rate, everyone at Hogwarts would be wanting one for Christmas. He wondered if he and George would be able to keep up with the demand. Unfortunately, word of the pygmy puff had also spread to the teachers, and to one toad-like professor in particular. The day before Halloween, Umbridge tracked Fred down and asked him to
keep his sideshow creatures to himself, rather than excite impressionable young school children.
Fred smiled and nodded and acted as though he was in agreement with her. The moment her back was turned, however, he made a rude gesture in her direction. It didn't take long for Hermione to hear about Fred's run-in with the High Inquisitor. Apparently, that little ferret Malfoy had witnessed the scene, and he went and laughed about it with his mates, who were then overheard by Harry and Ron. They, in turn, informed Hermione, who accosted Fred about it in the common room after dinner that evening.
Fred!
Fred sat up and twisted around in the squashy armchair, which was no small feat given how easy it was to sink into. It was one of the most sought-after chairs in the common room, but as a very well-liked seventh-year student, he found that other students were often willing to vacate it for him.
Hermione, to what do I owe the pleasure?
Hermione ignored his question.
Is it true?
Fred was silent for a moment as he tried to work out what she was asking about, but nothing came to mind.
Is what true?
Is it true that Umbridge spoke to you about Humphrey today?
Oh, yeah, Fred shrugged. She told me not to take him out of the tower anymore. Said he's too much of a distraction or whatever.
She did what? Hermione asked.
Her voice increased in volume at the end of her question, which caused other students to look over at her momentarily.
I can't believe this. She's...
The bushy-haired witch seemed unable to finish her own sentence, too caught up in her indignation. Fred shook his head.
I know. She's not going to stop me, though.
Hermione's hand reached out and caught his sleeve.
Fred, no, you mustn't. If she catches you with Humphrey, she could...
What happened to resisting? He demanded. We're already risking everything by attending DA meetings. How is this any different?
But what if you get expelled?
Hermione's voice suddenly sounded very small, and Fred realized that she was genuinely worried for him.
It's your last year, and...
I don't care, he said.
She looked incredulous.
I don't. I've always known. Hermione, look, for me, my education doesn't come from books or classrooms. It comes from doing, from experimenting. from trying things on my own. If I get expelled, so what? It's not the end of the world.
I know, but... Hermione sighed, her face crestfallen. Never mind.
No. What were you going to say?
Curiosity burned inside of Fred. What was she so reluctant to tell him? It took several more minutes of pestering on Fred's part before she finally caved. It's just... I'd miss you, she said, so quietly that he almost didn't hear. He blinked and tried to process what that meant. She probably just meant that she would miss his jokes and silly antics, he decided. Surely she didn't mean anything beyond that, as much as he might hope that she did.
I'd miss you too, he said honestly.
But as Fred lay in bed that night, eager for the magnificent Halloween feast that would take place the very next day, his mind kept drifting back to what Hermione had said, and why she might have been so desperate to keep it from him. Chapter 3. Umbridge Gets Involved. November brought with it blustery days and frigid nights. Fred disliked November, because it felt like a placeholder month. Halloween was over, and now there was just a long slog until the Christmas holidays. He tried to pass the time between classes and homework with product testing. Thanks to that sodding git Malfoy, he didn't even have Quidditch to fall back on. But he missed spending time with Hermione. She was knee-deep in OWL preparations, even though she wouldn't take those exams until the spring, and he didn't feel like there was a place for him in her life anymore. At least he still had Humphrey, he supposed. After his run-in with Umbridge and Hermione's cryptic confession, Fred tried very hard not to incur the girlish wrath of the High Inquisitor again. He struggled with this, however, given how much he enjoyed winding up the old toad. As it was still winter, and still very cold for poor Humphrey, Fred did not keep his promise to contain the pygmy puff to Gryffindor Tower. Instead, he continued to carry the purple critter around in the pocket of his robes when it was his turn to babysit, and he didn't feel a single pang of remorse about deceiving that horrible woman. Fred knew that Hermione would be very cross with him should she discover that he'd gone against Umbridge, so he couldn't tell her what he was up to. That did cause him some regret, because he didn't like the idea of deceiving the witch he cared so much about. Every time he looked into Humphrey's inky little eyes, however, he tried to convince himself that he was doing the right thing. It wasn't too difficult to believe that, when business was booming and the demand for pygmy puffs was more than he and George could keep up with. Orders were pouring in from students in every year and every house, and some of them were suggesting new colors, too. If he had rolled over and let Umbridge talk him out of sharing Humphrey with the rest of the student body, he, and George, would have missed out on a hot commodity. He didn't care about the money, but he did care about bringing joy to his fellow students during dismal times, and these were dismal times indeed. He should have known that his attempts to cheer up the other students would be squelched by Hogwarts' tyrannical leadership once again, though. The second week of November, he found himself cornered by Umbridge in a lesser-used third-floor corridor. Someone must have told her where he kept Humphrey, because she was quick to pluck the purple creature from his left pocket before he could ask what she was doing.
"Mr. Weasley," Umbridge said sweetly, "I thought I asked you to keep your silly little critter away from the other students."
She was squeezing the pygmy puff too tightly, if his bulging eyes and muffled squeaks were any indication. Fred's hands curled into fists as he grappled with the sudden urge to rip the hideous pink bow from her head.
"You did," he said, setting his chin. "But that seemed pretty unfair to the other students. They like pygmy puffs. Who are you to say they can't experience the joys of these creatures for themselves?"
Umbridge drew herself up to her full height, which was still several inches shorter than him.
"I am the High Inquisitor, and I say that these pygmy puffs must go."
Her lips twisted into an ugly smile as she released Humphrey. Fred had to dive forward to keep him from hitting the hard stone floor.
"Had you not pushed the issue, I might have been more lenient, Mr. Weasley. But now? Well, I'm afraid I have to take drastic action. As of this very moment, Pygmy puffs are banned from Hogwarts.
Banned? Fred exclaimed. You can't do that.
Oh, I think you'll find that I can.
Umbridge giggled and walked away, leaving Fred with an unsettling feeling in his stomach. The next morning, Fred was dismayed to see several posters hung in prominent spots around the castle. They all said the same thing.
Educational Decree Number 47. Pygmy puffs are not allowed on the grounds or within the castle. Signed by the High Inquisitor on the 10th of November 1994.
Fred wanted to punch something every time he saw one of those posters, but he also wanted, more than ever, to flout Umbridge's stupid rules. This ridiculous decree wasn't going to change anything. There was no way he was going to let that miserable hag tell him what to do. Unfortunately, the sudden ban on Pygmy Puffs had aroused Hermione's suspicion. Later that morning, she marched up to him in the courtyard and asked, with her hands planted on her hips in a stance eerily similar to the one his mother used when interrogating him, how the new decree had come about. Fred, not wanting to keep her in the dark any more than he already had where Humphrey was concerned, immediately confessed to being responsible and explained his actions leading up to the decree being declared. He wished that he could take it back as soon as he saw the disappointment in her eyes, however.
"How could you, Fred?"
she let out a sigh.
"Now poor Humphrey will have to stay in his cage all day, because I won't risk him hitching a ride out of the common room in an unsuspecting student's bag or robes. You know he gets restless when he has to stay in his cage. This could all have been avoided had you not deliberately antagonized Umbridge."
Fred felt a flood of guilt wash over him at the thought of Humphrey sitting alone in his or Hermione's dorm room. There would be no warm pockets to curl up in, and no fresh air ruffling his fur on the rare occasion when he ventured to stick his head out and see where he was.
"I screwed up," Fred said.
He gave Hermione a pleading look, begging her to understand.
"I shouldn't have disobeyed Umbridge, I get that. But you know she was being completely unreasonable.
All I know is that you've jeopardized Humphrey's very presence in this castle because you couldn't stand the thought of following the rules for 1 second,"
Hermione snapped, her eyes blazing. Fred recoiled, in part due to her words and in part due to the venom with which she said them. He thought that she'd be able to see where he was coming from, but she seemed to think of him only as a selfish rule-breaker, and that hurt him deeply.
"Hermione, I..."
"Save it, Fred."
With a huff, she spun on her heel and walked away, and Fred felt his last vestiges of happiness evaporate with her departure. Fred's day did not improve after Hermione's rebuke. In charms, Professor Flitwick expressed his dismay at Fred's failure to cast an Ascendio charm. At lunch, he barely touched his food and ignored George and Lee's attempts to engage him in conversation. He also tried very hard not to look at a certain bushy-haired witch, but was less successful at that than he was at evading his twin and best friend. Defense Against the Dark Arts, which took place during the period directly after lunch, was likewise awful, though that was to be expected. Umbridge was her usual simpering self, and she seemed to be especially keen on torturing Fred today. Twice, she docked points for his inattentive expression, and even threatened him with a detention when he tried to argue that that was simply how his face looked all the time.
"Enough, Mr. Weasley,"
she cried, brandishing her wand at him. He tried to continue speaking, but found that no sound came out. She had cast a nonverbal silencio on him. The handful of Slytherins in the class snickered and exchanged pleased glances. Fred groaned, silently, and put his head on his desk. At least this day couldn't get any worse. Or so he thought. Once Umbridge's lesson was finished, he grabbed his bag and made to leave the classroom with George. His twin was a few steps ahead of him and already out of the room when Umbridge spoke.
"Hem, hem. Mr. Weasley, could you come here, please?"
Umbridge said loudly. Fred grit his teeth together and turned back towards her. She waved her wand, then let out a giggle that made his skin crawl.
"There. Now you can speak again, which will be very useful in a moment. Mr. Malfoy?"
Fred spun around and watched through narrowed eyes as Draco Malfoy sauntered into the room.
No doubt he'd been lurking just outside, ready to be summoned. The slimy little git.
"Mr. Malfoy here tells me that you are still in the possession of a pygmy puff," she said.
"Does he?" Fred shot Malfoy a murderous glare. Perhaps the snake had also been responsible for informing Umbridge that Fred was carrying Humphrey around outside of Gryffindor Tower. He must still be sore about Slytherin's loss to Gryffindor in their last Quidditch match.
"How very helpful of him."
"Mr. Weasley, are you or are you not still in possession of a pygmy puff?"
Fred looked her dead in the eye. If he was going to tell the truth, he might as well do it right.
"I am."
Umbridge gasped, and her stubby fingers moved to cover her mouth as she trembled with barely concealed rage. Malfoy simply looked pleased with himself, perhaps hoping that some extra house points would be thrown his way for providing credible information.
"Detention for you, then, Mr. Weasley. Students who do not abide by the educational decrees set forth by the High Inquisitor are subject to..."
Yeah, I know," Fred said, waving his wand. "Just tell me the pertinent information, would you?"
"Fine,"
Umbridge sniffed.
"Meet me at my classroom at 8 tomorrow night, and don't be late."
Fred nodded.
"I'll be there."
As he walked out of the defense classroom, however, his mind wasn't on his impending punishment, or even the potential extra points for Slytherin. Instead, all he could think about was Hermione. She was already so disappointed in him, and he couldn't help but wonder how much more disappointed she would be if she found out about this. Time seemed to fly by, as it often did when Fred was dreading something, and before he knew it, he was headed to the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom to serve his detention. His feet were like lead, heavy and uncooperative, but he eventually reached the classroom door and gave it a firm knock.
"Come in,"
Umbridge's girlish voice simpered, and he had to repress a shudder as he pushed open the door. She looked up and saw him, and her lips curled into a sinister smile.
"Ah, yes, Mr. Weasley."
She instructed him to sit at a desk near the front of the room, then handed him a deep red quill and a piece of parchment. Fred already knew what to expect. Lee had served detention with Umbridge before and wasted no time complaining about what it entailed.
"What am I to write, then?" he asked.
He held her beady gaze as he waited for her response. Despite the tiny amount of apprehension that he felt, he was determined not to show anything but a brave face.
"I was thinking, I must obey the Hogwarts High Inquisitor would do very nicely."
Umbridge waved her wand, and the words appeared on the blackboard behind her.
"Is that all? Seems rather short," Fred said lightly,
relishing the frustration that was clear on the toad's face.
"Well, I'm sure you'll think differently once you're finished here, Mr. Weasley."
Umbridge wrapped her wand on his desk.
"Enough dilly-dallying. Start writing."
Fred picked up the quill and began to write out the words that Umbridge had assigned him. Seconds later, he had to bite his tongue to keep from crying out, as the very same words cut into his hand. He wouldn't give Umbridge the satisfaction of hearing his agony. The pain was sharp at first, but he noticed that the more he wrote, the less he felt it, even though the words cut into his flesh anew with every repetition of the line. After a quarter of an hour, he barely felt it at all, though perhaps that was because his thoughts had drifted to Hermione again. He was gutted that she was so angry with him. This was worse than being banned from Quidditch, or hearing his mother disparage him and George for wanting to open a joke shop. No matter what else was going on in his life, Hermione had always been a constant, and lately a source of comfort. She was the sun, bringing light and joy to his life. Without her, everything felt dark and dreary, like Dementors had taken up permanent residence inside his head. Just over half an hour had passed when a knock sounded at the classroom door. Fred started, his gaze immediately flying to Umbridge's face. Her mouth had formed a perfect O shape, so it seemed unlikely that she was expecting whomever was on the other side of the door. Fred's curiosity was piqued.
"Come in,"
Umbridge said again. Fred twisted around in his seat, and his own mouth fell open when he saw who it was. Hermione. She stalked into the room and headed straight towards Umbridge. Between her hands, which were clenched into fists at her side, and her mouth, which was set in a straight line, Fred surmised that she was angry. Thankfully, her ire no longer seemed to be directed at him.
"Professor Umbridge,"
Hermione began, once she was directly in front of the woman,
"you're punishing the wrong person. It was my idea to keep Humphrey, the pygmy puff. Fred had nothing to do with it."
Fred abandoned his lines to watch the tense exchange unfolding in front of him. What on earth was Hermione doing, and how had she found out about his detention?
"Nothing to do with it," Umbridge repeated. "I find that rather difficult to believe, Miss Granger. Mr. Weasley is a known rule-breaker, and, well, am I really to imagine that he nobly took the fall for you?" "Yes, the pygmy puff was my responsibility. Fred was only trying to keep my record clean."
Fred was impressed by the way that Hermione held the toad's gaze long enough to plant a seed of doubt. Umbridge's brow furrowed, and she looked over at Fred and then back at Hermione several times, as if trying to silently verify Hermione's claim for herself. Finally, she spoke.
"Very well, Miss Granger. Since you have just admitted to being in violation of Educational Decree No. 47, I have no choice but to assign you detention as well. You can join Mr. Weasley here."
She rummaged in her desk drawer for a moment before triumphantly producing another dark red quill, identical to the one that Fred had been using.
"As luck would have it, I have another quill that you can use. I keep a spare one on hand for situations such as these."
Her awful, gloating smile was back, and Fred's stomach twisted. Punishing the swatty, well-behaved Hermione Granger had to be exhilarating for her. He only hoped that she would show some restraint in her punishment, as unlikely as that was.
"Miss Granger, I would like you to write, 'I must not keep unauthorized pets.' That ought to do the trick. Oh, and I shall need you to dispose of that puffy creature immediately."
"He's already gone," Fred lied, before Hermione could respond. "I sent him off to my parents. I figured it wasn't safe for him here, so I sent him off with one of the school owls last night."
Umbridge's smile faded.
"How clever of you, Mr. Weasley. I suppose that settles the issue, though you can rest assured that I will follow up to make sure it is gone."
Hermione sat down next to Fred, her posture as prim and proper as ever. He wondered what she was thinking, why she had suddenly decided to take some of the blame for hiding Humphrey. Did this mean she wasn't angry with him anymore? A tiny glimmer of hope began to pierce through the darkness that had settled over his mind. The two Gryffindors sat in near silence for almost an hour. Fred's hand was throbbing with a dull ache by the time Umbridge dismissed them, but he thought that Hermione's might feel even worse. Her eyes seemed to glisten with tears as they exited the classroom.
"Hermione," he said, pulling her into an alcove around the corner. "Are you all right? How's your hand?"
In the dim lighting, he couldn't make out her expression, but he could have sworn that he heard her sniffle.
"Hermione, talk to me, please."
"I'm fine," she said quietly. "Let's just go back to the common room before Umbridge finds us out here and gives us another detention. I wouldn't put it past her."
"What? You wouldn't want to go through that again?"
Fred joked. Hermione didn't reply. She merely tugged at his arm so that he was forced to follow her back into the corridor.
"Thank you for trying to take some of the heat off me, by the way. I didn't think..."
"We can talk about it later."
Hermione began to climb up a flight of stairs so quickly that Fred, despite being taller than her, could barely keep up.
"Hermione, what—"
"Not now, Fred."
Fred fell silent, deciding to focus his efforts on mirroring Hermione's swift movements. The pair reached Gryffindor Tower in what felt like no time at all, and he waited for Hermione to climb through the portrait hole before speaking once more.
"What was that about? Why the hurry to get back? You're a prefect. If anyone saw us, you could have pretended you were doing rounds or something."
There was a cramp in his side, and he massaged it gingerly while awaiting her reply. Hermione's eyes danced around his face, seemingly unable to settle anywhere.
I just wanted to finish up some homework."
Fred was certain that that was a load of hippogriff dung, but he didn't dare press the issue. Hermione's discomfort was palpable,
and he didn't want to scare her off, especially now that she was, for reasons unknown, being friendly towards him again.
"Right," he said. "Well, good luck with your homework, then."
Hermione thanked him and bid him good night. He scrounged up a small smile as he bid her the same, then ran up to his dorm to find it blissfully empty. Humphrey squeaked at him from his cage, and he let out a weary chuckle.
"Hey, Humph."
He freed the critter from the cage and gently deposited him onto the bed.
"I reckon you've been a bit lonely up here. Sorry about that."
Humphrey squeaked again, a little louder this time. A moment later, he was nuzzling Fred's injured hand.
"Oi, oh, thanks, Humph."
The creature had begun gently licking his hand, which felt strange but not altogether unpleasant.
"I'll have to bandage that up when you're finished."
He pondered aloud as Humphrey continued to lick his wounds.
"I can't figure out what's going on with Hermione. She's acting rather odd, and I can't make heads or tails of her behavior. Yesterday morning I thought she hated me, and now she's talking to me again. She even barged into my detention and stood up to Umbridge, if you can believe it. We're still not back to where we were, though."
Humphrey stopped tonguing his hand and stared up at him.
"I'm not even sure what we were before. Friends, I suppose. I wanted more, but at this point I'll take what I can get, you know?"
Humphrey curled up by his hip, and now that his hand was free, Fred took the opportunity to grab his wand and fashion a bandage out of a sock from his trunk. It would have to do until he could visit Madame Pomfrey. He snuggled up with Humphrey and even managed to doze off for a while. He dreamed that he had detention with Umbridge again, but when he arrived at her classroom, she morphed into Hermione and made him write, "I must not love Hermione Granger," over and over, until his hand bled and he cried for mercy. Fred awoke to George hunting through his bedside table, and he realized that his hand was throbbing again. With a small groan, he returned Humphrey to his cage and pulled out an old potions textbook. A mild forgetfulness potion, just strong enough to make him forget his nightmare, sounded pretty good right about now. Just as he started reading the table of contents, however, Hermione's voice popped into his head, begging him to stay out of trouble. Seconds later, he snapped the book shut. As much as he might want to, he couldn't risk sneaking out to brew the potion. Hermione might just stop speaking to him altogether, because for whatever reason she didn't want him to get into trouble. A few bad dreams were a small price to pay, if it meant that he could keep her in his life.
"Fred, have you seen my notes on the crop custards?" George asked, looking over at him.
Fred shook his head.
"Damn. I wonder if I left them in our room at home. Remind me to check when we're back for Christmas."
With a jolt, Fred remembered that the Christmas holidays were coming up. He hadn't given them much thought in recent weeks, but now he wondered if Hermione would be joining his family at the Burrow, as she often did. He honestly wasn't sure whether he wanted her there or not. Things were so weird between them at the moment, and he didn't want to spend his holidays feeling like he was on thin ice around her.
"Sure,"
he replied in answer to his twin's question. He would worry about Christmas break later.
"I'll remind you."
Chapter 4. The Snake Attack.
The first week of December passed in a blur of DA meetings, skiving snackbox testing, and the occasional homework assignment. Fred learned from Ron that Hermione would be away with her parents over the Christmas break, doing something called skiing. He was relieved by this information, as he didn't relish the thought of dealing with her mixed signals in close quarters. This Christmas was going to be grand. He and George had elaborate plans to prank their family members when they opened their gifts on the morning of the 25th, and Fred was hopeful that they might finally be able to perfect their crop custards as well. Right now, they were still trying to figure out how to avoid the weird rash that sprouted up on some of their testers. Fred also realized that he would be Humphrey's sole caregiver during those weeks away from school.
"I could take the little fellow home with me," Lee offered,
but Fred waved him off. He was excited to spend extra time with his fluffy friend, and besides, Humphrey would be fine at the Burrow. There were lots of rooms to explore and crumbs to eat. Fred's mother would never need to know that he was there. Following his detention, Fred was careful to stay out of Umbridge's way as much as possible. He no longer tried to talk back to her or wind her up. This wasn't because he suddenly cared about getting in trouble, but because he didn't want Hermione to feel like she had to try and cover for him again. Hermione was fairly distant after that detention, too. She didn't tell him and George off for continuing to test their snack boxes, nor did she speak to him about anything other than Humphrey's care. Fred wondered if she regretted standing up to Umbridge in such a blatant fashion. Perhaps it was all well and good to covertly undermine the Toad's regime, but landing herself in detention was a step too far. As promised, Umbridge attempted to follow up on Fred and Hermione's claim that Humphrey was no longer in the castle. She stopped by Gryffindor Tower, unannounced, several times. But thankfully, Hermione had the foresight to give the puff to DA member Hannah Abbott for safekeeping. Each time Umbridge came sniffing around, she came up empty-handed.
"It appears that you were telling the truth after all, Mr. Weasley," she said after her fourth visit.
Her eyes darted around Fred's dorm room as she spoke, however, no doubt hoping to find evidence of other wrongdoing.
"I have satisfactorily investigated this matter, and will conduct no further follow-up unless I receive damning evidence that the creature does, in fact, continue to reside within these walls."
Fred nodded and followed her down to the common room, where she repeated the same speech to Hermione. Harry and Ron were nearby, and their exchange of pleased glances made Fred feel somewhat forlorn. Hermione didn't so much as look in his direction, even after Umbridge had climbed back through the portrait hole.
"I suppose that's settled, then," was all that she said, before turning back to the lumpy object.
A hat, Fred decided, she was knitting.
"I'll ask Hannah to return Humphrey at the next DA meeting."
"That'll be the last one till after break, yeah?"
Ron asked, and Harry nodded.
"See you lot there," Fred said.
Only Harry and Ron acknowledged that he had spoken. Hermione was busy frowning at her knitting project, so he gave up trying to capture her attention and simply headed back upstairs to his room. The final DA meeting of the term was held on the 18th of December. Fred was one of the last students to arrive, which allowed him to avoid not only Hermione, but Angelina, Katie, and Alicia as well. Angelina had informed him earlier that she'd found replacements for him and George, so he was in no mood to make small talk with his former Quidditch teammates either. Once the room of requirement was filled with the usual crowd, Harry announced that the night's meeting would be spent reviewing the spells that they'd learned and practiced previously. When Zacharias Smith had something churlish to say about this, Fred was quick to shut him up. Several students laughed, but Hermione wasn't among them, he noticed with a small twinge of sadness. Harry had them partner up and start demonstrating the impediment jinx on each other. Fred turned to George, intending to pair up with him, but his twin had already grabbed Lee's arm. He was nice enough to give a meaningful nod in Hermione's direction, though, Fred thought irritably. Feeling some reluctance, he walked over to Hermione and cleared his throat. Off to the side, he could see Ron giving him a puzzled look.
"Would you like to partner with me, Hermione?"
The words sounded oddly formal, and he wished that he'd at least thought to deliver them in a funny manner. Hermione appraised him for a moment, before nodding.
"Sure."
Ron huffed, but after a reproachful look from Hermione, he moved over to Neville and asked to work with him. Fred watched as Neville's face lit up, before turning back to Hermione.
"Say, think you can do this one wondlessly?" he asked,
suddenly remembering her skill with the more advanced form of magic. Her cheeks reddened, and she gave a little half-shrug that seemed to be genuine modesty.
"I suppose I could try."
Fred tucked his wand into his pocket and began to windmill his arms in circles. As he did so, he watched Hermione carefully, waiting for her to utter the spell.
"Impedimenta,"
she said, her voice clear and firm. Fred felt his arms begin to slow in their movements, though the effect only lasted for a few seconds and wasn't very strong.
"Well done," he told her, eliciting another blush. "You've definitely mastered the basics if you can do a wandless impediment jinx. I'm impressed."
"It's not a big deal," she said.
Fred could barely hear her over the shouts of their fellow students, so he took a step closer in order to hear her better. Her eyes widened, and he could have sworn that she let out a small squeak, so he quickly retreated.
"Sorry,"
he muttered. Though he was sorely tempted to question her about her baffling behavior, he decided that this wasn't the best time to do so.
My turn?
Hermione nodded again, and he performed the jinx with very little trouble. The two of them then took turns practicing on each other until Harry blew his whistle and told them to switch to Expelliarmus. When the meeting was over, Fred thanked Hermione for partnering with him before making a hasty exit with George and Lee.
Merry Christmas, he called over his shoulder as an afterthought.
In a few short days he would be home, celebrating the holiday with his family, and Hermione's odd conduct would be the furthest thing from his mind. Fred went to sleep that night, excited about the upcoming break. At some point, however, he became aware of distant shouting, so he forced himself to open his eyes and climb out of bed.
"George, what's going on?"
he whispered, pulling open the curtains around his twin's bed. George didn't know what was happening either, nor did Lee. The three friends decided to make their way down to the common room to see if anyone else was awake and had more information. Fred was surprised to find Professor McGonagall standing by the fireplace and looking very out of place amongst the small group of students gathered around her. She must have had very little notice before being summoned to the tower, for her tartan dressing gown was pulled tightly around her, her glasses were askew, and her signature neat, tight bun was rather disheveled.
"Ah, Mr. Weasley," she said,
her sharp gaze moving between Fred and his twin. Fred looked at George and saw the uncertainty that he felt reflected in his brother's eyes. What could have caused their head of house to look even more somber than usual?
"What's going on, Professor?"
Fred asked at last.
"Come with me, please. You too, Miss Weasley," she said.
She beckoned to Ginny, who had just come down from her own dorm room. Fred thought that she looked very small in her faded nightgown, and the funny face that he pulled did little to make her smile.
"What about Ron?" George began.
"He is already aware of the situation," McGonagall said curtly.
At this, a few students began whispering to each other in speculation. Fred glared at them.
"Now come."
Fred and George waved goodbye to Lee before following McGonagall through the portrait hole and down several flights of stairs. Ginny trailed behind them, and every time that Fred looked back at her, her face was scrunched up in worry. He tried to get McGonagall to drop some kind of hint about why she wanted to speak with them privately, but she remained tight-lipped until they reached the gargoyle which concealed the staircase to the headmaster's office. Fred exchanged another look with George. Things must be very bad indeed if they were being taken to see Dumbledore.
"Fizzing Wisby,"
McGonagall said, then turned to Fred and his siblings as the gargoyle moved aside.
"I'm afraid I have some bad news. Your father has been attacked."
"What do you know?"
Fred and George spoke at the same time, while Ginny simply gaped at their professor.
"Mr. Potter saw it happen."
McGonagall stepped onto the moving staircase and held up a hand to keep any further questions at bay.
"I understand that you may be confused and want to know more. All will be made clear in due time."
Fred, George, and Ginny followed her onto the stairs. Ginny clung to George's arm as the door to Dumbledore's office came into view.
"In you go,"
McGonagall said, ushering the three of them inside. Wordlessly, Fred looked around at Dumbledore, Harry, and Ron, who all looked equally solemn. Ginny spoke first, appealing to Harry for information. It was Dumbledore who answered, however, explaining that their father had been injured while working for the Order. He was at St. Mungo's, the headmaster added, and the Weasleys would be going to Grimmauld Place so that they could more conveniently travel to the hospital and see him. Fred finally found his voice and asked how they would get to Grimmauld Place. Dumbledore pointed at the rusty old kettle sitting on his desk. A portkey was their safest option since the flu network was being monitored. Minutes later, Fred and the others were in the kitchen at 12 Grimmauld Place, waiting to hear from Harry himself exactly what had happened to their dad. His account left Fred's head swimming with more questions than answers, however. Fred wanted to know what his father had been doing, where the snake had come from, how serious his injuries were. In fact, he would have liked to go to St. Mungo's and see him straight away, but Sirius put a stop to that. As he and his siblings sipped their butterbeers and waited for their mother to arrive, Fred's mind drifted, as it so often did, to Hermione. Had she been informed about his dad's attack? Would she have shouted at Sirius for exercising logic and reason like he, Fred, had? Hot shame bubbled up inside of him. He couldn't waste his energy yelling at Sirius, not when his father was, from the sound of his mother's brief note, fighting for his life in St. Mungo's. Arthur Weasley had always been a bit of an odd duck, but Fred admired him for that. He was equally devoted to every single one of his children. Well, except for Percy, these days. Which was no small task. On every birthday and every holiday, the Weasley patriarch came bearing unique and thoughtful gifts, many of which were inspired by Muggle items in some form or fashion. Fred was quite certain many of them had formerly been Muggle items, smuggled home from work by his father, and then tinkered with in his private shed. Despite their strange nature, however, these presents always filled a need or related to an interest of the giftee. Fred shook his head fondly as he recalled the dung bomb holder fashioned from something called a golf ball holder that he had received on his 12th birthday. His father had to be okay. Fred simply couldn't imagine life without him. Fred didn't remember falling asleep, yet he found himself waking in a confused daze for a second time as his mother bustled into the kitchen hours later. Rubbing the sleep from his eyes, he stood along with Harry and Ron and waited for her to deliver an update about his father's condition. Once he received confirmation that the man would pull through, he sank back into his chair, thoroughly relieved. When the family split up to get more rest, Fred and George claimed the same bedroom that they had stayed in over the summer holidays. Fred climbed into the twin bed on the right side of the room and instantly drifted off. Hermione featured heavily in his dreams, though not in particularly pleasant ways. When she wasn't crying inconsolably and refusing to tell him what was wrong, she was blaming him for giving her Humphrey, which had apparently ruined her life. Fred was very glad when George woke him up and told him that it was time for lunch. Downstairs, his spirits immediately lifted upon seeing Humphrey's cage amongst the school trunks. "Humph!" he cried, rushing over to free the critter. The pygmy pup squeaked and tumbled around in Fred's hands, seemingly too excited to sit still.
"I missed you, you charming little bugger."
"Looks like he missed you too," George said with a grin.
"Yeah."
Humphrey's bumbling antics managed to pull a laugh out of Fred. The sensation felt foreign, but not unwelcome. He hadn't realized how much he'd needed to laugh. It was like he was emerging from a fog and seeing things clearly again. Worrying about what Hermione was doing or feeling was a silly distraction. He needed to get back to what mattered to him, which was making people laugh. In these dark and uncertain times, Fred Weasley was going to be a source of joy and merriment. Fred would have liked to continue playing with Humphrey, but his mother announced that lunch was ready, so he deposited the puff back into his cage and whisked him away to the bedroom with a promise to return later. Fred could hardly concentrate on eating his corned beef sandwich at lunch, too eager for the visit to see his father afterwards. George seemed to be similarly preoccupied, for he was jittering his leg so much that Harry finally snapped at him to cut it out.
"He seems tense, don't you think?" Fred muttered,
loud enough for only his twin to hear. George nodded. At Fred's suggestion, the two began to discuss how they could cheer him up. Unfortunately, their notes on the crop custards were likely in their room at the Burrow, and they were stuck at Grimmauld Place for the foreseeable future. But Fred knew that they could come up with something. With Christmas right around the corner, surely it wouldn't be that difficult to plan a fun prank.
Chapter 5. Hermione Comes for Christmas. Bright and early the next day, Fred and his siblings were presented with the monumental task of decorating Grimmauld Place for Christmas. Fred spent the better part of the morning feeling very grateful that he was old enough to perform magic outside of school, for he didn't care to hang the tinsel garlands and fragile baubles by hand. Ron nearly fell off a ladder when he tried to hang some mistletoe in the front hallway. Mrs. Black's portrait startled him when she began to scream. By lunchtime, Fred was tired and hungry. Those feelings were soon forgotten, however, when he overheard his mother talking to Sirius in the kitchen.
"We'll need to make sure another room is ready for her," Mrs. Weasley said.
Fred sidled closer under the pretense of grabbing a stack of clean plates she had left on the counter.
"And, of course, we'll have an extra place setting ready at dinner, assuming she's arrived by then. I do apologize for the short notice, Sirius."
Fred wondered if the she was Tonks, but Sirius quickly cleared that up.
"It's no problem, Molly. Hermione is more than welcome to stay for Christmas. In fact, the more the merrier."
Fred almost dropped the stack of plates. Hermione was coming for Christmas? He began to set a plate down in front of each chair, his mind buzzing all the while. So much for a Hermione-free break. At the last DA meeting, she'd seemed almost afraid of him, so he was determined to avoid her at all costs. He knew that would be difficult when they would be eating meals and visiting his father together, but he'd figure something out. Within minutes, the rest of the Weasley clan had piled into the kitchen, proclaiming their hunger. Again, Fred barely touched his lunch, too distracted by the knowledge that he would be seeing Hermione in a matter of hours. George frowned at him as he snuck bits of bread into a small pouch for Humphrey.
"What's going on with you?"
"Nothing," Fred lied. He didn't want to talk to George about Hermione. He'd rather not think about her at all, if that were possible.
He finally took another small bite of his sandwich and chewed it slowly to avoid further questioning from his twin.
"Right."
George's skepticism was clear from both his expression and tone, but he knew better than to push.
"Hey, after lunch, do you want to check and see if Buckbeak's shed any talons we can use for the snack boxes?"
Fred nodded, grateful for the mention of the snack boxes. At least now he had something else that he could focus his energy towards. Or so he thought.
"Ron, would you see if Harry wants anything to eat? He's been holed up in that room all day. Oh, and maybe you can tell him that Hermione will be here later. That might liven him up a little."
Fred's mother clapped her hands together, looking delighted. Fred suddenly wished that he could turn invisible, as George turned to him with wide eyes.
"So that's why you're acting so strange? But how'd you find out?" he whispered. "Overheard Mum and Sirius talking about it just before lunch," Fred whispered back.
He hesitated.
"I'm trying to sort out how I feel about it, all right?"
George patted him on the back.
"Hopefully you get your feelings sorted soon, mate. It's nearly Christmas. If there was ever a time to tell Hermione how you feel..."
"I know, George," Fred muttered. "I know."
He slumped down in his chair and sighed, annoyed that he couldn't seem to avoid the topic of the bushy-haired witch, no matter how hard he tried. The afternoon sped by in the blink of an eye. Fred and George retired to their room after finding a few hippogriff talons scattered on the floor in Buckbeak's quarters. They wanted to grind them up and use them in their sniffle suites, but had to wait until Buckbeak shed them, because there was no safe way to trim a hippogriff's talons. Fred was glad to have a distraction. He was able to joke with George for the first time in days, and getting back to the routine of testing, making adjustments, and then testing some more was strangely relaxing. He should have known that the feeling wouldn't last. Mrs. Black's portrait began to scream again around 6 o'clock, and there was a knock on the twins' bedroom door shortly thereafter. Their mother wanted help with dinner preparations.
"Hermione's just arrived," she told them as she led them down the stairs.
Fred immediately felt his shoulders tense up.
How would it feel to see her again?
Moments later, he had his answer.
It felt amazing.
Hermione's nose and cheeks were red from the cold. Her hair was windswept, and her face was lit up with a smile. Fred wanted nothing more than to wrap her up in his arms and carry her to the nearest fireplace so that she could get warm.
"All right there, Hermione?"
George asked, smiling back at her. She nodded, but her eyes flicked over to Fred as though she wasn't sure what to make of him being there. He took a deep breath and flashed her a grin.
Did you have a safe trip?"
he asked, barely aware of his mother telling George to go and set the table in the background.
"Yes. The night bus was rather crowded, given the holiday,
But I had hot chocolate and a good book with which to occupy myself, Hermione said. Fred wasn't surprised to hear that Hermione had spent her journey with her nose in a book. He was spared the struggle of coming up with a witty reply, however, by his mother's next words. Fred, dear, would you help Hermione with her things? She's staying in the room next to you and George. I'd ask Ron, but he's checking on Harry. The poor thing has been ever so tired these last few days. Anyway, a simple locomotion charm should do it. Off you go. Fred wanted nothing more than to refuse, but he didn't want to rouse his mother's suspicion, so he pasted on another smile and waved his wand towards Hermione's trunk without complaint.
It's, good to see you, he said, as he directed the trunk up the stairs and down the hall to Hermione's room.
Well, as soon as Dumbledore told me what had happened to your father, I knew that I had to come. Hermione brushed past him in order to open the door, and he felt his stomach flip over.
Right. Glad you could make it.
Fred looked around the room. His mother had made the bed and fluffed up the pillows. It looked so welcoming, and he suddenly wished that he could climb into the bed and snuggle up with her. Giving his head a slight shake to dispel those thoughts, he asked her where she wanted him to put her trunk. Over in that corner is fine, she said, pointing. Fred lowered the trunk and settled it into the corner that she had indicated. He then made to exit the room, but Hermione's hand on his arm stopped him. Fred, wait. He turned back to her, hoping that she couldn't hear his heart thumping in his chest. How many times had he dreamed about being alone in a room with her? Now it was finally happening. He just wished that he knew where they stood. In his fantasies, he always knew that much. How are you doing? She asked, her voice gentle.
Fine. I'm fine.
Fred wondered if he was trying to convince her or himself. Are you sure? I imagine you've been so worried about your father.
I'm fine, Fred repeated. Really?
Well then, how is little Humphrey? Hermione smiled and began to unwind the scarf from her neck. It looked to be one of his mother's thick, warm creations, but Fred didn't want to ask just then. I've really missed him.
Humph is doing just grand, Fred said.
The corners of his mouth lifted slightly as she pulled a face.
What?
You called him Humph, Hermione said as she began to unbutton her coat. Fred laughed, amazed at how quickly and easily he could fall back into old patterns with her. Maybe he had been wrong to think about avoiding her.
So I did.
You know I hate that. Hermione shook her head, then threw her jacket on top of her trunk. Listen, I'd love to catch up, but I need to talk to Harry, so I'll see you at dinner? Fred nodded and backed out of the room. As he walked away, however, he found that he was filled with a warmth that was not at all unwelcome. He and Hermione seemed to be past their earlier stiffness, and he was already looking forward to seeing more of her at dinner. Dinner was a rousing success, if Fred did say so himself. He had been charming and funny, and Hermione had responded well to his jokes and banter. Now, he was possibly the tiniest bit tipsy after consuming several goblets of elven mead. Careful, Fred! Hermione steadied him as they walked into the entrance hall together. Fred closed his eyes for a moment, taking in the moment. It was nearly Christmas. His father was going to be okay, and Hermione was speaking to him normally again. Plus, her hand was on his arm again, and it felt so right. Maybe it was the mead, or the proximity to Christmas, or maybe it was just the result of his stuffed-down feelings coming to the surface again, but before Fred knew what he was doing, before he could even think about the potential consequences, he had pointed up at the mistletoe that Ron had finally managed to hang earlier that morning.
Mistletoe, he said quietly, unable to keep the tiniest of smirks from appearing on his face.
Hermione looked up, then over at him. Her eyes were wide, but her mouth was stretched into the biggest smile that Fred could ever remember seeing her wear. That smile buoyed his confidence and gave him the courage to close his eyes, leaning towards her as he did so. The kiss didn't last long. Truthfully, it was barely more than a peck,
and yet it made Fred so ecstatic that he almost expected to spontaneously combust like one of the fireworks he and George had developed. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw George waggle his eyebrows at him, and he felt his cheeks redden. He cleared his throat and tried to sound casual as he said,
"Happy almost Christmas, then."
"Happy almost Christmas, Fred," Hermione said, sounding breathless. She looked as though she wanted to say more, but instead she bid him good night and hurried back downstairs, murmuring something about helping Mrs. Weasley with the dishes. Fred grabbed George by the arm and whispered that they needed to talk in their room. He was determined to fill his twin in on his change of heart in regards to Hermione, as well as just how he planned to disclose his feelings for the witch. Because after watching her get detention to try and clear his name, after hearing the concern in her voice when she asked after him, and especially after seeing how she smiled at him when he pointed at the mistletoe, Fred was fairly certain of one thing. Hermione Granger had feelings for him, too. Christmas Eve was a splendid affair. Fred's mother outdid herself with a buffet of sandwiches, crisps, and cheese and cracker spreads, not to mention a wide assortment of mince pies. After everyone had stuffed themselves with food, they hung stockings, painstakingly embroidered with their names, from the fireplace mantel in the drawing room. Hermione wanted to hang hers at the end, along with Harry and Sirius's, in order to keep the Weasley stockings together. But Ron insisted that because they were both like family, they could hang theirs next to his. Harry shrugged and hung his in between Ron's stocking and Ginny's, while Hermione hung hers beside George's. With a sly wink, Fred leapt up and switched his stocking with George's, so that his and Hermione's hung beside each other instead.
"We look good together," he whispered in her ear as he made to sit back down.
The blush that stained her cheeks after this comment reinforced his belief that she returned his feelings. Still, he wasn't going to say anything with the rest of his family around. He wanted to wait for a private moment. One by one, members of the party began to drift off to bed, until only Fred, George, and Hermione remained.
"All right there, George?" Fred asked.
He gave his twin a meaningful look.
"You look rather tired."
"Oh, I thought we were going to..."
George glanced at Hermione, then at Fred, before making a show of standing and stretching.
"Yeah, I'm knackered. Night, you two."
"Night," Fred and Hermione said together. Fred chuckled as George's footsteps departed.
"You're not tired yet, Hermione?"
"Oh, no. I was hoping to stay up and read a bit longer." Hermione held up a book entitled The Founders Four, The Extraordinary Witches and Wizards Behind the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. It had a beautifully illustrated cover, but it was much, much thicker than any of Fred's usual reads.
"Ah, I see," Fred said, his voice light. "That must be illuminating."
"Oh, it is!" Hermione launched into an explanation of all the information that she had learned so far. But Fred was far more focused on the enthusiasm in her voice and the passion behind her eyes than on the words coming out of her mouth. She was always beautiful to him, but she was somehow even more beautiful when she was excited about something. Half an hour later, Hermione concluded her speech and let out a yawn. A moment later, she let out another.
"Right, I think it's time for bed," Fred said, stifling his own yawn. "Here, let me."
He scooped her up into his arms. She made a small noise that sounded like a cross between a yelp and a gasp, before muffling her giggles into his chest. And he carried her to her room. He had to move carefully, because the only sources of light in the house were the ugly sconces set into the walls, and he wasn't keen on waking Mrs. Black's portrait, or anyone else. Once he was in front of Hermione's door, he carefully set her down and brushed the hair away from her eyes.
"Good night, Hermione," he said softly.
Hermione murmured something that he couldn't quite hear, then tugged on his sleeve, leading him into the bedroom. His heart pounding, Fred followed. This was, perhaps, the private moment that he'd been waiting for, the time to admit his feelings.
Hermione waved her wand and lit the oil lamp beside her bed, before shutting the door and turning to him. The flickering flames caused shadows to dance across her face, rendering her expression unreadable. She seemed to be waiting for him to say something, however. So he did.
"Hermione, I need to tell you something."
Fred took a deep breath to calm his nerves before plunging into his confession. Although he was no stranger to diving into things headfirst, this was different. The stakes were so much higher now.
"I like you. I've liked you for a while, really. You're beautiful, intelligent, and we get on so well. Of course, I think you're a magnificent friend, but I want more. And I'm hoping you do, too."
Hermione blinked up at him, and for a moment he worried that she was too sleepy for this conversation. But then she whispered,
"Oh, thank goodness. I feel the same way. That is, I like you too, Fred."
And his heart soared. This was the best Christmas present that he ever could have wished for.
"May I kiss you?" he asked,
feeling uncharacteristically shy.
"I didn't want to assume."
Hermione answered by standing on the tips of her toes and pressing her lips against his. With a sigh, Fred closed his eyes and wove his fingers into the curls that he had always longed to touch. They were softer than he had imagined they would be, softer even than Humphrey's fur. Fred didn't know how much time passed before they came up for air, but it felt like hours.
"I suppose we'd better get some sleep," Hermione said.
She sounded reluctant, and Fred would have capitalized on that any other night by insisting they continue to snog. Tonight, however, was Christmas Eve, and he and George had big plans. He cupped her chin in his hands and gave her one last kiss.
"I'll see you in the morning."
"Boys!"
Fred's mother shrieked. Fred and George grinned at each other from across the drawing room. It was Christmas morning, and as the occupants of Grimmauld Place meandered in to check their stockings, they found themselves trapped beneath the mistletoe that the twins had hung in the wee hours.
"Fred, George, this really isn't funny," Mrs. Weasley snapped. "We need to eat breakfast so that we can visit your father."
Fred grinned.
"Oh, come on. It's a little funny, Mum."
"I'm not kissing Harry,"
Ron said, jutting out his chin. Sirius looked as though he might be sick as he side-eyed the Weasley matriarch with whom he was stuck.
"This isn't mistletoe, little bro."
With a chuckle, George ruffled Ron's hair.
"It's mistletoe, which means that you have to punch the person you've been trapped with."
Groans filled the room, but eventually everyone had gone through with punching their partner, though some exerted more force than others.
"Jeez, Harry, who knew you had such a mean right hook?" Ron whined, massaging his arm.
Harry, on the other hand, seemed to be in better spirits at last. He was smiling as he hurried off to fetch Ron some ice. Fred approached Hermione, who had been paired with Ginny, tentatively.
"I hope my sister didn't punch you too hard," he said, taking her hands in his.
The rest of his family was too busy exclaiming over the content of their stockings to notice the two of them standing so close together, though Fred thought that he saw Harry's eyes flick over to them once or twice.
"Oh, no, I fully expected her to, but she went easy on me."
Hermione gave his hands a squeeze.
"Even if she had, I know that she would have fixed me up right away."
"Too right, I would have,"
Fred murmured, leaning in to kiss her. He was surprised, and a little hurt, when she took a small step back.
"What's wrong?"
"I'm not ready for your family to know just yet. We can tell them tonight," she added quickly,
perhaps sensing that Fred was upset.
"I just don't want anything to distract us from getting to St. Mungo's to see your dad."
Fred had known that his feelings for Hermione were strong, but in that moment, he realized that he really did love her.
"You're amazing, you know that?"
He held her gaze for a moment, then grabbed her stocking and held it out to her.
"I snuck a small present in here when George and I were hanging the mistletoe this morning. I hope you like it."
"Oh, Fred, you shouldn't have," she said,
even as she shook a small, black velvet jewelry box out of the stocking. When she lifted the lid, Fred held his breath, awaiting her reaction, much as he had when she opened her birthday gift. Nestled inside the box was a necklace, with a simple silver chain and a purple pygmy puff pendant.
"I know jewelry isn't really your thing," Fred said, "but I thought it would be a nice reminder of the thing that helped bring us together. I mean, if it hadn't been for Humphrey, I don't think we would have spent nearly as much time together this year."
"And I wouldn't have landed myself in detention for you," Hermione said, but Fred could tell that she was teasing him. "You know, it wasn't until after I sat through that detention with you that I realized how I felt. And then I didn't know how to act around you."
"Don't worry about that. We figured it out in the end, didn't we?"
Fred rocked back and forth on his heels.
"So, what do you think of the necklace?"
"It's beautiful, Fred. Thank you."
Hermione handed him the box before taking her hair in her hands and lifting it away from her neck.
"Would you mind putting it on for me?"
Fred didn't mind one bit.